Hello and welcome to Real World HR, the podcast putting the human back into HR. I'm Louise Kennedy, a HR expert, chartered CIPD professional and founder of award-winning HR consultancy Oculus HR. In the Real World HR podcast, we focus on people and business, telling the stories that we've learned from and explaining the processes which have supported the solutions. In this episode, I'm joined by Louise Brown. Are you ready to step into the real world of HR? So thank you very much, Louise, for agreeing to come on the podcast with me today. I'm really looking forward to our conversation just to be able to pick up where we've only known each other a couple of months, really. We met at an awards ceremony. Do you want to kind of just say who you are and give a little bit of background about your role that you have? Obviously, you work within the college, but do you want to give me a little bit of an overview of who you are and what you do?
Yes, of course. And firstly, thanks very much, Louise. It is confusing. We've got two Louises here, isn't it? But thank you very much for inviting me along to talk to you today. So, yeah, I'm Louise Brown and I'm Vice Principal at Wigan and Lee College. I have been here probably over 12 years now. My background is HR. I'm a Chartered Fellow of the CIPD and joined the college a number of years ago as their Exec Director. But my portfolio has expanded since then and I'm responsible now for all corporate services. That includes things like the estate management, capital projects. I'm the Senior Safeguarding Lead, but I'm still kept very, very busy around the people strategy and the wider strategy there of engagement and well-being. Really, my career has taken me very much through a career path linked to HR, being a senior manager in local authorities and starting my early career actually working directly in schools as well. So I'm sort of steeped in HR. It's in my bones.
HR and kind of obviously within the further education sector and the school sector as well, isn't it? So it's quite an interesting different viewpoint. Obviously, we deal with a lot of small businesses, so it's interesting to be able to have this conversation today. So I suppose it's a bit of a starting point when you joined the college. So as you said, 12 years ago, you joined the college and you've always been, you know, involved within the HR and the college. Has there been a significant change or a significant gradual change over the 12 years from when you started to where the college is now?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that, you know, a number of years ago, the college had sort of lost its way. And if I'm totally honest and frank, when I joined the college, I sort of thought, oh my goodness, what have I done? I felt like I'd stepped back considerably in many years in my career, because what I was seeing was a big void around cultural leadership, really, and some of the more modern day HR practices that didn't really seem to exist. So we set about a transformation, really. There was a big change in senior leadership here at the college, and we set about our cultural journey of taking the college forward with that belief around all what a clear people strategy does for an organisation, and wanted to create an environment that truly was a great place to work, where we were looked at as an employer of choice or a destination college or whatever, however you might want to describe it. So we set about on that journey. It's been a tough journey, really hard at times, but very rewarding. And, you know, as they say, you know, you can culturally, you can lose that in a flash, but it takes years of building up that trust and that engagement across your workforce, really. And that then transpires into a great place for our students to come and work and enjoy their education as well, which ultimately is what we're all about, really, here, about that student-focused approach.
And do you think that's just an interesting point that you just made there? So do you think that because you've managed to make those changes through the people strategy and the culture, that actually what you deliver, which in this case is kind of to students, do you think that the delivery to the students has improved because actually the workforce is delivering and more comfortable in the environment that they're in?
Undoubtedly for me, it goes hand in hand. And we've got some real strong data and metrics here at the college about how the college's journey. We've recently been inspected and got a good inspection. We've increased our student numbers over the last 5 years in over 1,000 students, increase in numbers. And that's practically unheard of, I think, up and down the country. Unless you're merging with another college, another established college, then, you know, that really doesn't happen. And we've just repatriated, I suppose, students that had chose to go elsewhere because maybe their experience here wasn't as it should have been. That then manifests into an increase in income. You know, so over the last 5 years, I think more than £12 million growth we've had. We're well in the £40 million income bracket now and increasing as a college. And that allows other investment then, investment in your workforce, investment in your capital, your estate, your resources, that all help build that great experience both for students and staff. So it's definitely had that big impact about high performance working through an engaged workforce and what that then delivers for your business, for your bottom line of that business. And I know you work with a lot of smaller businesses, Louise, or SMEs and things like that. But, you know, from an engagement of your workforce and your people strategy, it has such strong bottom line business benefits that I'm perplexed by any organisation that wouldn't embark on that, really.
Yeah, and I think that's really, as you say, it's matterless what size the business is. I think if you get the people strategy and the culture right, and the engagement then follows on, and then actually whether you're delivering a service or whether you're delivering parts or manufacturing, that then makes a difference to your overall delivery. And as you've just said, then the income and the investment that rolls back into it means they can make more investment within the wider business and also within the employees that you've got within there as well. So I think it's a really interesting journey cycle there as well. So one of the things I know that kind of sparked our conversation when we first met was that you are involved in what's called the Greater Manchester Charter, like the Employment Charter. Do you want to just explain, because that's not throughout the whole of the country, but do you want to kind of explain a little bit about what that is and how that's made an impact upon you as the employer as well?
Absolutely. Yeah, so across Greater Manchester, which obviously we're part of in Wigan, the mayor developed a charter called the Greater Manchester Good Employment Charter because he believed very strongly on the benefits of good employment and what that can bring to the economy, to individuals, and the far-reaching connotations of that about having a happy, healthy, well-looked-after workforce. So we were one of the early supporters of the charter back in probably about 2019, and it did land itself very well with starting to work on that. It aligned with our strategy here, but as we went into the pandemic, which none of us were predicting there, some of the work we'd done with the charter, which I'll come to in a little while, really helped us navigate our way through what was a very, very difficult time. But fundamentally, the charter's built on 8 pillars, really, about around good employment. And for me, any good employer is probably doing these in some form or other. So that's about your security of work. That's not using 0-hour contracts that people don't know from one day to another whether they've got employment or work, around flexible working, whether that's hybrid working, agile working, policies around that to support your employees' pay. That's very much built around the real living wage, because you, to be a member there, you have to be a real living wage employer. Recruitment, fair recruitment processes, particularly around equality and diversity, strong people management, you know, your procedures that you'd expect any organisation to have. But the two other strands around engagement and employee voice and health and well-being are the real big ones we've been involved with the charter, where they've asked us a sort of a bit of an exemplar really out there to go out and talk to people about what you can do there. And actually, it doesn't have to cost you an awful lot of money, because that's the one thing that comes back about a health and wellbeing strategy. I can't afford to do it. Well, we do things on a shoestring here. We have no budget for that. We have no budget barely to do what we need to do on a basic level. And then there's a pack of resources for employers that the charter's developed as well. So we've been involved in some of those. We've developed some resources around what good employment looks like for young people. I've been part of some leadership research and published papers around that. So there's a big bank of resources that employers can go to if they need some help or information around that. So that's pretty much around the characteristics of the charter.
I think all of those pillars, as you say, when they're fundamentally put into a business, I think can make a substantial difference. And I think really interesting that you've then been involved in doing some research work around what good employment looks like as well. And is that, do you feel as though a lot of that work's been based around the pillars that you mentioned there for the charter?
Yeah, I think a lot of the research paper was very much around cultural leadership, which goes hand in hand with, in my view, employee engagement and the importance of that voice and the trust piece, really, around cultural leadership. So it was really interesting to go through that because we were looking at, you know, a lot of reading around it on the wider research, really, around what a difference, you know, a good employer and a good leader can make to a business's bottom line performance. I think Purcell's black box theory does a lot around that, doesn't it? Because he did a large piece of work around two pretty much identical organisations with the same processes, procedures, same sort of customer base in place, but one far outperformed the other. And the only differentiator there was the leadership, the leader and manager there. So, yeah, it was a good piece of research there that really underpinned the work around the charter and the importance of some of the elements of that.
So from a leadership point of view, how did you make sure that everybody was on board with what it was that you wanted to do continuing forward? You know, so you had a plan, you had a people strategy, then you had your leaders within the business. I would imagine not all of them sat within the culture that you needed to go forward. But then how did you, I suppose, in essence, educate and bring people on that pathway with you to ensure that the culture was delivered in the correct way that you needed it to be across the whole of the college?
Yeah, I think communication was one of the baseline things around there, and going out and talking to everybody, really, and trying to build up the trust piece there and people not view things with suspicion because, you know, there was a lot of long-standing staff that really cared about the organisation, that they could see that the college had lost its way somewhat. And it's probably fair to say they were a little bit browbeaten, and, you know, to start building up their trust and their belief in, we had a vision here, this was all about aspiration and doing the best for our college, our young people, our community, and that was what we were all about. It takes time, and I don't think you can rush that. We set about going out, running focus groups, and the principal and myself went out across every site on numerous occasions and sat with cross sections of staff to listen to them. And at first, as we set about doing that, there was very little came forward, but as the trust built and they could see some of the positive outcomes that were coming out of these discussions, then more people were willing to come and talk to us openly and honestly, because we would say, yes, it's great, tell us, yes, what's great working here, but we're more interested in what isn't. What drives you mad when you're driving to work, or when you get out your car and think, goodness me, that's making my job really hard today? I'll give you a really simple example. One that came forward in very early focus groups was about the board markers to wipe clean whiteboards in the staff room, in the classroom, sorry. And staff were saying, well, I go into a classroom and there's never one there, there's nothing to clean it with, and it delays the start of the lesson, and it, you know, it can cause disruption. And so very simply I said, right, I'll order 400 whiteboard markers. They arrived in my office within 24 hours, I think it was. We ordered them off Amazon or something, and each member of staff had one, their own one. I said, pop it in your bag, put it in your toolkit. It's always there. It's yours to keep. You know, there's some very, very simple things that you can do that don't cost a fortune that have a really big impact. There's other things that is difficult, and there's limitations. There might be budget limitations or things like that, but we talk to staff, we try and find a different creative way. But the fact that you're listening to them and feeding back, at the end of each year, we do quite a big publication piece around You Said We Did, and put a lot of the things out there that we've been able to do and develop and change, and some of the great suggestions that come forward from staff. So It is. It takes time, consistency, honesty, you know, putting actions where your mouth is, really, and do, as you say, speak volumes and return dividends, really.
Yeah. And I think some really interesting points that you've just made there that I've just made note of, really. I think the fact that you've led it from the top, you know, the fact that the principal and yourself went out and you did those focus groups and you met with a whole range of people within the college, I think that's invaluable, isn't it? Because people then, I always think it's a bit of an audience with, isn't it? You know, people are then thinking, oh, actually, they've got time and they want to be able to listen and they want to be able to, you know, be interested. And then for you to be able to just, that simple example that you gave, you were able to solve people's problems, which actually were probably irritating people for months, if not years, because there was nothing available. And as you say, on that particular situation, kind of pretty low cost to be able to do low end on it, but it made a difference to so many people so quickly. So for me, those quick wins are just kind of, they're perfect, aren't they? And they show that you're listening and that you want to make a difference to people. And people do that across all different sectors and businesses. And the other thing I think I really like about what you said there was around consistency, the honesty around what it is that you're doing, you know, being truthful so people trust you to be able to take the next steps on it. And the example of that to be able to do that, you said we did, I think is brilliant, you know, because I think at the end of the year, if people then realise there's some accountability that fits in with, actually, yes, you did say that, and that's what it is that you did. I think it's an easy way to be able to do it. And I think it creates so much more engagement from people. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And the point you make, Louise, about buy-in around the senior team is essential. And a lot of people come and talk to me and talk to us as an organisation about how we've done this, the journey that we've been on. But you have to get that buy-in at senior level. They have to believe in what you're trying to achieve there, because you're trying to push a big boulder up a hill, I feel, if you haven't got that buy-in at senior level and a true values-driven organisation. Because if you are truly a values-driven organisation with a moral compass where it should be, for me, it's why wouldn't you do this? What on earth would be the reason that you wouldn't go out there and be honest and care about your workforce? Because let's face it, we genuinely do. We want to do everything we can for them to come to work, enjoy being at work. You're a long time at work. And particularly over recent years, people have had such a tough time, haven't they, with the pandemic and the cost of living crisis and goodness knows what else. Then we really genuinely do care. And another thing, I think kindness is massively underrated as a leader. Sometimes people have a vision that kindness means being soft or it's all pink and fluffy, but it's not. It is about having your values, your integrity, those things in the right place. And people see that and they want to be part of that.
And I think probably therefore the very starting point for you when we talk about culture and what you wanted from the business to be able to move forward, the values and the vision piece was probably the biggest starting point, isn't it, to be able to develop the people strategy, to be able to think about what the culture is. You needed to know what you were about as a college and what it was that you ultimately wanted to achieve from a not just a delivery point of view, but also kind of for people to work within the business. Do you think is that the starting point when people need to think about culture and, you know, see the success that you've made from where it was to where it is now? Do you think that's a good starting point for it?
I think it's a very good starting point, but it doesn't have to be a massive big piece of work around fancy published strategic plans. And yes, documents are important and some of those things out there are, but for people to truly understand, because in a nutshell, ours is a student-centred approach. We're all about our students, doing the absolute best we can for them and also for our community. And then when people feel part of that wider community, for that organisation that's trying to do good, and some of the wider elements of our work, yes, we're great at teaching and learning, we're upskilling thousands and thousands of students to secure their futures, but also raise that economy in the borough that we're working hard, very hard for, because it's that wider piece. But then there's other things we do around our charity work. And that's so important from a values-driven organisation, and staff come forward. And yes, they might not be the one that's running the charity 10K or climbing up Snowdon or whatever, maybe some physical charity fundraising things are happening, but they're out there supporting, they're talking about it, they're connected with it. And there's a lot of research there around a workforce that feels part of a wider community about giving back to their own local community as well, and the difference that that can make to them.
Yeah, and really that comes under obviously one of the pillars that you said there was around the engagement element of it. And I think that's what I was thinking in my mind there was all those things that you've just mentioned there bring engagement about, but it's not about writing that down on a piece of paper because you couldn't plan for people wanting to go out on in their own time to be able to raise money for charity, or you know, you couldn't plan for that necessarily. I mean, you could put that as a broader headline of it, but you know, you couldn't plan for a lot of the things that you've just said there. But actually that is the engagement that works within the college, because people like the environment that it is and they want to be able to be there and to be able to do it together, don't they?
Absolutely. And I think again that's something that's underestimated around that community spirit across your workplace, across your workforce, and bringing people together. And it helps them feel like they're contributing wider to the world. As I said, it's been such a tough few years, hasn't it? And staff have come forward how much they really enjoy that side of things as part of, we link that in with our wellbeing strategy.
Yeah. Well, I was going to move on to wellbeing, but the last thing I was going to say around the engagement was around, I mean, you do have that employee voice, don't you? And you do encourage that through software, don't you? You've got a tool that you use that people can communicate with you through that. So have you seen a massive positive that, obviously, again, you've got many employees, but have you seen a real positive that people have been able to use a tool in that type of way to be able to express their concerns or kind of real positive things, you know, be able to, I suppose, and communicate with you effectively?
Yes, most definitely. And we were very fortunate because the charter asked us to be part of a pilot project for this piece of software. It's an app that everybody can access called Strive. And really, it's an employee engagement app that can be used in a range of ways, really, but very much about going out and doing those pulse surveys, those health check across your organisation with your people and out there and ask questions quickly to connect with people. So if you're working in a dispersed way, as we all were really during the pandemic, then to be keeping in touch and using that as a feedback mechanism. We also now use it as part of our general staff surveys. We ask regular questions. It might be about sustainability, what more you want to see around the wellbeing strategy as a working towards our green agenda targets, what else can we do? And it also acts as an anonymous suggestion. So if there is something that people want to put forward that they don't feel comfortable about putting their name to, they can feed it in through that and it lands in. It's totally anonymous, but we can look at that. And from a wider piece, if you feel that there's something in a particular department that you want to try and find a bit more out about, ask questions to make sure people are okay. It's a really, really good tool. You can share policies, procedures, you can do shout outs, recognition across to colleagues across the workforce. So it's a really, really good tool. It's simple and quick. And I think that's something that's important. Don't make things too complicated, too hard to access, because people are busy. They've all got really busy jobs. So to get people to engage with things, it has to be easy, quick, simple, and to the point, because people will see a value of doing that then.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting. It seems like you've been a bit of a game changer for the college to be able to use a tool like that to be able to get the level of communication back through as well. So it's real positive to see that that's used as effectively as what it should be. It's the purpose of it, isn't it? But, you know, so many businesses say, well, that, but it's not really used. But to hear how effective it can be used is brilliant.
Yeah, and the data that it can give you as well is really important, isn't it? So when you're going back out with those messages, the communications that you said we did, you know, there's clear data that it can help you with, trend data, things like that, to go out. So it's not just Louise saying, oh, this is happening and that. It's coming through loud and clear on there.
And the other bit I just wanted to pick up on was the wellbeing strategy that you've got. You've got something in place that you did that. And I know that obviously the awards that we met at, you were shortlisted in the Personality Awards around the wellbeing that you do within the college. Do you want to just kind of give us a little bit of an idea? Because I know you said at the beginning, it doesn't always have to cost a fortune to be able to do things. So just a bit of an idea of what it is that you do and why it's so great, in essence.
Yeah, we recognise, alongside, you'll not be surprised probably to hear, that we valued that side of things a lot and wanted to set about that wide approach to the investment in the health and well-being of our staff. And a lot of people say, oh, I can't afford to do that. But there's lots and lots of ways of things that you can engage with. There are some things that you do need as a business, I think, to invest in. And, you know, we're not just talking about occupational health. We've got on-site counselling services. But that we've managed to engage those for staff through a partnership approach with a charity within the borough that we developed a good relationship with there. So there's different ways that you can access things through relationships, but investing and the value of the on-site counselling has really kept, it's enabled people to remain in work who wanted to remain in work that had they had to go through the 3, 4, 5+ months waiting list through their GP would have probably meant that they became too ill to be able to continue in work. And then that makes it even longer to recover and things like that. So it really, again, from the bottom line business benefit of it, it not only is it great for the individuals that they're accessing that such important support that they need, but from a business, it's keeping your employees in work or getting them back into work if they've been unwell. But we do some real simple things around our strategy there. We do free Friday breakfast. They have toast porridge or a cup of tea, a cup of coffee on a Friday morning. All staff get that. It's before our session for our CPD that we do every week. They get to chat to colleagues who they don't normally chat with. And this, it's such a strong topic of conversation across the college, doing free Friday breakfast. So as well as things like the free Friday breakfast, we encourage a lot of activity, physical activity as well, because it doesn't need me to tell you all about the benefits of that. And across the workforce, we've grabbed at times champions for a variety of things. So we have a running groups, we have golf, we do rounders, we do a range of physical activity groups there. We've got menopause champions, we've got lots of crafting clubs, mindfulness we do. We're knitting for the Louis Body Society as a charity there to create this massive scarf to wrap around a building in the centre of Manchester. So we're part of that. We've trained a lot of staff in mental health first aid. We do encourage like walking meetings, one-to-ones outside, using the outdoors as a real focus there. Animals. Everybody's crazy about dogs and cats here, and lots about sharing things around that as well. So some of those things, they don't cost a lot to do. It gets some buy-in. We've got some great staff who really believe in the power of health and well-being, are great champions for us out there. So as a college community, we really do all get involved. That's just a few things, but the list, I could be here all day telling you some of the things that happen that we get such positive feedback from staff.
Yeah, and I think some of those things aren't necessarily massive things, as you say, doing like the free Friday breakfast. I think it's just a great way to be able to get engagement from people, to be able to kind of, I suppose, share in essence together, to be able to speak to different people. But it's just we've got a client who do free lunches. They do free lunches every day. They're obviously a smaller business, but they find that a massive difference within theirs, you know, from an engagement point of view. And also, you know, the cost of living element of it, you know, saves significant money that's there as well. But you say all the things around kind of the activities and, you know, running clubs and the knitting thing, I think that's great, isn't it? You know, you're getting people's buy-in to be able to do things that they wouldn't necessarily normally be involved in if they hadn't been working within the business. So I think you can see massive benefits of what it would be for people within there as well.
Yeah, and we're raising some great money for lots of local charities through our involvement and working with them, that so the wider community sees the benefit of this as well.
Yeah, and I think that's part of it. I know being involved with our local secondary school, that was one of the messages that I was trying to say to them continuously. You know, you've got to be able to show in the local area what it is that you're doing and the impact that you're making upon your students, but also the impact upon the local area and how people can, kind of residents can buy into it. And obviously you want your children to be able to go there as well. So I think they're really important things, that the perception of others in what it is that you're delivering. And in essence, it helps by the employees going home and speaking to their families about the positive things that they do within the workplace, which encourages more people to want to come and work with you as well. So it's kind of, it fits so many of the boxes, doesn't it, to be able to kind of, you know, have a really positive impact.
It's a win-win. That's the way we look at
Definitely
it.
Definitely, yeah. A win-win. So I suppose just to kind of wrap up of the conversation that we've had there, so what would you recommend for leaders to do to promote wellbeing within their teams? What would be a great thing? I know you've gone through a bit of a list there. What would be kind of a good thing to have leaders on board to be able to help wellbeing within their where they work?
I think it's important that managers and leaders across the organisation understand what a true sort of wellbeing strategy is about and the benefits and why you would go out and try and do that, because it's not clear automatically to everybody about the wider benefits and why you would be asking them to do that when they've all got very busy jobs and lots of priorities, lots on their to-do lists. And, oh gosh, this is something else that Louise is going and asking me to do. So I think it's important to talk to them and get that baseline understanding, because, again, you need their buy-in to help push this out there. And then it's really communicating that. And, you know, it isn't enforced fun. It's people who want to be involved with that, because, you know, it isn't for everybody. And I know that. And, you know, there's some people that really wouldn't want to be engaged with some of the activities of the clubs and the societies, the book clubs, the choirs, the whatever it might be. And we're not going around forcing people to do that. We want them to have a choice to be able to engage in something that, again, helps them, helps their individual well-being, that ultimately can then go and have those ripple effects at home and in their wider life and social life, but make coming to work an enjoyable experience as well through these other ways to engage. I mean, loneliness, I mean, that was a massive thing that came out of the pandemic. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are still struggling with that. So creating that community in the workplace can really help with things like that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so many valid points, I think, that you've just said there. So where can listeners find out more about you or about what the college does?
So there's lots of information out there. They can connect with me on LinkedIn, Louise Brown, Vice Principal, Wigan and Lee College. There's lots of information there. There's lots of information on our website and through the Greater Manchester Good Employment Charter, because there's lots of information there about good employment on their website. You don't have to live in Greater Manchester to access and read some of that information, and you'll see some of the wider involvement that the college has as there, particularly around the engagement and wellbeing piece.
Yeah, and I think just to our listeners kind of who are in our locality area, there is a potential that there's going to be something, there's certainly something in North Tyneside at the moment, and there's something that's going to hopefully roll in once the new mayor system goes through. It's going to roll through kind of the northeast over the following weeks and months. So I think that'll be a really good thing that people can look at. But as you say, using that, what you have there as the pillars on the Greater Manchester Charter already, I think is a great way to be able to start thinking from a business point of view to make sure that they're accountable.
Yeah, I think there's many wider on the horizon, really, similar approaches and initiatives to the charter there. So I think it's certainly gathering momentum up and down the country.
Yeah, and it's a bit of a case, well, why would you not? You know, why would you not want to engage with that to be an employer of choice, you know, to be able to attract more people into it? And as everybody's just struggling with recruitment at the moment to get the right people through the door, so this actually would make a longer-term benefit for that.
It really does make a long-term benefit around that. So from attrition rates, for us, for example, in the last year, we've reduced by 7.5% our attrition rate in those that join us in the first year of employment. And we're 10% below the sector benchmark for colleges. So they're big numbers, again, which manifest themselves. If you think about how much it costs you to recruit and onboard a new employee, you know, again, there's massive financial business benefits there for reducing your attrition and your recruitment.
No, without a doubt. I think it's great to be able to have those statistics to be able to kind of make reference back to as well. So thank you very much, Louise, for joining me. It's been great to be able to have the conversation. It's great to be able to understand what it is that you've done and the involvement that you've had with the charter as well, because I think that it does, no matter what the size business it is, it actually can make an impact. You know, the small things can be done, and as we say, kind of the win-wins that go into there, you can make a difference quite easily within a business. So thank you very much for our listeners for listening today at the Real World HR podcast, and a massive big thank you to Louise for joining us. You can find more about our information, as we discussed in the episode, in the show notes. Subscribe to the podcast so we don't miss out on future episodes, and please leave us a rating and a review. Real World HR, putting the human back into HR. HR is so instrumental in shaping, reinforcing and changing an organisation's culture. Take our HR health check quiz to assess the efficiency of your HR operations and uncover areas for improvement. We'll then share key actions and steps you can implement to ensure you're legally compliant, supporting your employees and managers, and supporting your business. It just takes 2 minutes and it's completely free. Head down to the show notes for the link.